It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And he is sitting here right next to me in the studio this week. And we're raring to go. Kind of a day out there so far.
A little bit.
Don't know what it'll turn into, but yeah, been so nice lately. Doesn't really matter. But, you know, if you're not going to go out and be around doing some outdoor things, you get to listen to the whole program today. So how about that? So I want to welcome back the regulars. You're the ones that keep coming back and keep us doing this week after week. And if you're new to the show, whether you've heard about it or stumbled on it, doesn't make any difference to us. Try to stick around for the hour. I promise you very little in life, but I will promise you that if you listen to the whole hour, you'll find out something that you didn't know before. And I would say most of the time it'd be quite useful.
We hope so.
Maybe not all the time, but yeah, you can't know too much. One of my 8,207,000 old sayings is that interesting people know a lot about a little, but a little about a lot. In other words, can you participate in a conversation? And that's what I like in people, and that's what I like to see. That's how I rate schools and so on, to see if the kids they put out have that ability. Just a little aside that you got for free. In fact, I'm in such a good mood today. I think we'll do the whole show for free. How's that grab you?
That is a good deal.
Besides, we all need it after this week.
Yeah, no kidding. We can't afford it.
How's that for a segue?
Yeah, it was not the best week.
No.
It's not been the best 3 weeks. But
no.
3 weeks ago, we were sitting at all-time highs and right in the middle of a long-term AI-fueled bull market. It certainly doesn't feel that way today. We're still in a bull market, and it just doesn't feel very bullish right now.
No, it sure doesn't.
The market has gotten itself in a really bad mood. But one interesting thing is that we had two really good days this week, Friday and Wednesday, I believe. And it was still managed to be down for the week, and not just a little bit. It was down substantially. So that tells you how bad the other days were. One ironic thing is that President Trump is touting a golden age for the U.S., but it's actually international markets that are performing the best right now. And in fact, China is leading the way higher since Inauguration Day, gaining over 22%. Go figure.
I'll explain that to everybody if I ever figure it out.
I have no clue what that is about. I don't see it. I still don't like China as an investing vehicle. I don't buy it at all. It seems like a terrible idea to put money into China right now. The NASDAQ officially entered correction territory this week. The average NASDAQ correction, that's correction is a drop of over 10%. The average NASDAQ correction goes down 19.4% and lasts 74 days. However, the current correction has already lasted 80 days and is down just 10.4%. So now this one, compared to the average, it has lasted longer and has not been as severe. So that's an interesting note. That's kind of kind of a theme with this drawdown, mm-hmm. is that it's not that severe, and it's really lasting quite a while. If we go back, although it depends how you measure it. Do you trace this back to late last year after we saw the inauguration bounce, or not inauguration, election bounce? Or do you trace it to the all-time highs that were made just 3 weeks ago? But if you go back to the post-election, that's when I think really the market started to go down. So it's lasted quite a while. The NASDAQ index is now sitting at extreme oversold levels, and the S&P index is now sitting at very extreme oversold levels, and the price-to-earnings ratio has been whacked from almost 28 to 25 just in a few days.
Yep.
Pretty incredible. One thing I mentioned was that this is sort of a long, slow drawdown, and you can really see it in the VIX, which is the volatility index. It's still sitting at normal elevated levels, really inside normal levels. Yes, towards the high side of that, but there's not been extreme at all, and there's no panic yet. There's no fear yet, and that's pretty interesting. Except that we just saw 6 trading days where the S&P has been up or down 1% or more.
Consecutively?
Yeah, 6 in
a
row.
That's bizarre.
That hasn't happened since 2020 during sort of the peak COVID madness.
Mm-hmm.
And so It's amazing that the VIX has managed to stay so low when we're seeing market movements like that. Well, the S&P is not far off its all-time high, but the average stock in the broad market is now sitting almost 31% off its all-time high. Imagine that.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. That means there's some stocks that have been just decimated, mm-hmm. over bringing down that average. The healthcare is the worst performing sector when it comes to that. That's followed by energy and technology. The three that have been the least affected, financials, utilities, and real estate. Real estate? Really?
Yeah,
I mean,
really?
In this market right now with 8% mortgages, the real estate is the one that's one of the least affected. It's really strange. A couple of months ago, it looked like rate cuts from the Fed were a thing of the past, and the discussion even switched to possible rate hikes. Today, that narrative is completely gone, and it's looking like there is going to be some rate cuts again. The probability of rate cuts has risen substantially, so that the market is now predicting 2 to 3 quarter point rate cuts this year. And there's even something like a 28% chance of a full point of rate cuts this year.
And possibly in 4 steps.
Yeah, that is a dramatic shift from where we were.
That's an outlier opinion, in my opinion.
I met with a company this week that is very, very connected to the Fed. They actually have a former Fed chair that sits on their board, and they were pretty adamant that it was going to be 2 rate cuts this year. That's not a certainty, but they know way more than I do about this stuff, and they were very convinced of their forecast. So just take that for what it's worth. Both the ISM Manufacturing and Services reports came out this week, and they both showed the economy expanding, which, again, kind of against the narrative right now.
Yep.
The manufacturing report was just into expansion territory for the second month in a row, although the report didn't look so great under the surface. On the other side, the services report was really strong, and both reports, I thought this was interesting, made mention of the uncertainty around tariffs. That is what is on everybody's mind right now, and that is to a large degree what's driving the volatility in the market. I don't think we have enough time to talk through the entire jobs report right now, but I did want to bring it up, and then we can get into it after the break.
It's guaranteed to be longer than a minute this time.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in that one. Headline number, 151,000 jobs created versus a forecast of 160,000. That's probably the closest to the target I've ever seen, within 9,000. And that was despite federal employment being down because of DOGE-related job cuts.
The ultimate good news, bad news scenario.
Yeah.
Good news, federal government employees were minus 10,000. Bad news, state and local governments were plus 11,000.
Yeah, I saw that.
What can you say? You know, it's hard to get rid of a bad cold, I guess. Anyway, but I'm going to help a little bit on this one by explaining to you why you have to take this jobs report with a grain of salt anyway. But Adam will get into it shortly. We'll pay some bills, be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do, as usual, have a trivia question brought to you by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. You can call Paul at 904-636-7888. And as I have mentioned before, commercial or residential, they do it all. All right. Of course, the thing that's going on right now is there's a lot of correction talk because there's a couple of indices that have actually reached correction stage. The broad market, the traditional way that corrections are discussed, meaning represented by the S&P 500. That's nowhere near yet. We'd have to lose another 5 or 6 points or something on there to get to correction territory. But the word correction is on everybody's mind, so I'm going to do a correction trivia. Since November of 1974, there have been 24 market corrections. In how many of those years were there actually 2 in the same calendar year? 2 market corrections in 1 calendar year. You know, that means, you know, it's not something anybody's going to just know, so it means don't be afraid to call and take a guess. First person to establish a bracket will get the thank yous from everybody who calls after. Pretty simple. All right. Let's go back to the jobs report. And I'm going to bring up one thing, if you don't mind, right before you get back into it. It is critical to remember when you're using these for decision making that in January, all of the jobs numbers are updated, reset, changed to reflect population changes throughout the year that are picked up on then. What happened this year in January in the household survey was major, really major. So the correction went in, and what it showed was that there were 2,234 jobs created at the household level in January. We know that's not true. This month, it showed minus 588.
Yeah.
We know that's not true.
Big number, though.
Yeah. Now that we have we've gotten rid of the comparison, January comparisons are for January and December and then for February and January, but next month, we'll have, in April, we'll get the March and February numbers. I think you can compare apples to apples there, but not now. So don't let the crazy number of household jobs dropping almost 600,000. Don't let that enter into any kind of concern you have about getting a job these days. That's my little word of caution.
Yeah, the headline number overall to me was kind of in the middle. It doesn't show an economy that's on fire, but it definitely doesn't show an economy that's shrinking. It's a good number, not a great number.
Yeah, and it's not inflationary.
Right. Which is kind of almost Goldilocks number, exactly what they would have wanted. Mm-hmm. And you saw the market react and go up on Friday. It was pretty volatile. It was down during the day, but it ended up a decent day. And I have to think that these numbers led to that. We saw the unemployment rate tick up from 4% to 4.1%, and average hourly earnings rose a good bit to end year over year at up 4%. So you're seeing nice wage growth. Mm-hmm. You're seeing nice job growth. It just on the headline level, it really looks like a decent economy right now. Again, I can make an argument that this economy is great. I can make an argument that this economy is decent, and I can make an argument that this economy is terrible, and they'd all be good arguments right now.
It's terrible if you live in D.C. and work for the federal government.
Yeah.
From home.
I mean, that's just one thing. We actually met with a woman who lives in D.C. and works for the government, and she was telling us how awful her job is right now, all the uncertainty. Everyone's just freaking out, and she was just, like, beside herself. It was she's been there 20 years, she worked in Jacksonville and then transferred to D.C., and she was just saying it's the worst that she's ever seen morale, and I can totally understand that.
Yeah.
Because most of these people are not, we want to see the government shrink because it has gotten too big. These are just normal people going to work and doing their jobs, and that just sort of made it very, hit home that it's real people losing their jobs up there.
Yeah, the economics of their situation are purely micro.
Right. Right. And and Trump and Doge are operating on a much more macro level. It's just an interesting situation. But I could make a great argument across all three scenarios right now. And it's really hard to point to one and say this is the right one.
You know, I made myself an omelet for breakfast this morning and I broke a few eggs.
Yep, me too.
That's what they're doing up on the hill right now.
Expensive eggs.
The government is so out of balance, so top-heavy, that they're going to have to break some eggs. And as Elon reminds everybody, yeah, we'll make mistakes, and then we'll find them and immediately correct them.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to err when it's gone so far one way. You have to err to the other side, or you're not doing anything. You can't take a scalpel, as they say, to a government that's bloated by 20, 30, 40, 50 million people. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, definitely not. It's a tough situation.
Yeah.
But there are other parts of the country that look great. Mm-hmm. There are other parts of the economy that look pretty solid. Housing is not one of them. Housing is looking pretty terrible right now. Mm-hmm. Mortgage rates have dropped from 8 to 6.7, and that's a substantial decrease. it's also still really high compared to where they were a few years ago at 3%. So it's just things are sitting longer, especially you're seeing it in Florida, you're seeing it in Jacksonville right now. There's more for sale sitting longer. It numbers wise looks like a normal housing market. So the days on market or months on market, I think, are right around the long-term average. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't look dire, but compared to where it was when everything was so hot, it does, if you use that frame, it does look dire.
Yeah, agreed. But the highlight, I thought, in all those jobs report was that manufacturing jobs are increasing again.
They are.
It was over 20 months. I don't know if it was a full 2 years. We've had a contraction going on in jobs and manufacturing output. And all of a sudden, a couple months ago, or maybe three even, that seemed to kind of plateau on the bottom, hit the basement, and now it's ramping up a little bit. And you know, those jobs are not, when you add 18,000 manufacturing jobs, it's not like adding 18,000 leisure and hospitality jobs. We're talking serious money,
yeah,
both in terms of personal income and benefits and so on, but also in terms of output, because the output from a manufacturing plant per unit of labor is much higher than in most other forms of pursuit for money, so to speak.
Definitely. The other, so that was 10,000 new jobs in manufacturing in this report. Mm-hmm. The other big part came from healthcare and social assistance jobs, up 63,000. That's good news as well. Healthcare is chronically understaffed, and those are largely high-paying jobs as well. Yep. So those are areas, manufacturing and healthcare, where those job gains can make a big difference in the economy.
Yeah, finance is kind of a weird one these days, because there's an awful lot of people that have been ordered back to work, places like Goldman Sachs.
Back to the office.
Yeah.
They were, well, you know, quote unquote working.
They were employed elsewhere, but being paid at Goldman Sachs. I'm sure a lot of them have always been doing a lot of work. But the industry seems to be in a state of flux right now, although it's profitable.
Mm-hmm.
Finance is very profitable.
Yeah. Yeah. The banks had great earnings this past quarter.
I'm looking at the finance ETFs, thinking maybe now's the time. I've been avoiding them for a long, long time.
Yeah, that is a sector I've been thinking about more recently. So outside of that big drop in the household survey of almost 600,000, overall, I'd say it was a pretty good report. Again, didn't blow me away, but it definitely didn't make a case that we're on a fast track to recession or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, the number of unemployed people rose 203,000, or did it?
I don't know. It's because so hard to tell.
No, that's out of the household survey. And I'm telling you, I read through all the numbers on the household survey, and I wrote them down and ignored them. Okay. I much prefer in times like this to use the establishment survey, when they sample big companies, and they tend to sample the same ones over and over, so they're actually doing a apples to apples comparison. And if they say they're going up 150,000, and then ADP came in at 77,000, that's the pure private sector, and both of those numbers are, as you said, they're solid. They're certainly not going to open your eyes or scare you or anything, but they're solid enough to believe that things are moving along just fine. Thank you.
One thing that leads you to believe that people are a little more worried about their jobs, that the number of people who left their jobs last year hit the lowest level since 2020. Americans quit almost 40 million jobs in 2024, but that's down 11% from the year before and down 22% from 2022. So when people aren't quitting their jobs to take better paying jobs, either they're scared because they think the market is weakening, or those better jobs just aren't out there right now.
Yeah, it wasn't all that long ago that people would just arbitrarily quit because they could get a job by tomorrow morning.
Yeah, just not even worry about it.
Yeah, nowadays, I don't care how unhappy you are with your current situation, if you don't have another job, stay where you are.
Yeah, that's pretty much what's happening out there. Although still 40 million jobs in 2024 is not a small number, but it's just smaller than the last couple of years.
Yeah, there's plenty to do out there. But I think the days of designing your own situation are long gone. you know, well, I'm going to sit at home and do this and this. I'll move to Boca Raton and work in Seattle, Washington. Not so much anymore.
No.
Some jobs are like that. They're made like that. And my youngest daughter just got one that's kind of a hybrid mix. But the company is spread far and wide. So it depends who you work for and what you do. But you don't have the same control over your situation that you did just a year and a half or 2 years ago. And that's not all bad.
No.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the VanWee Financial. Welcome back to the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And I remind everybody, lines are open, 904-222-8255, where you can shoot out an answer to our trivia question today. There have been 24 market corrections, meaning down 10% or more, since November of 1974. In how many of those years were there actually two corrections in the same calendar year? It's a whole number, and it's obviously no greater than 24. And I will even help you so far as to tell you it's not zero either. So you got a bracket at this point. So all you got to do is call them. You never know. All right, where to start? Things are just so crazy right now with the whole concept of the tariffs and such, tariffs and layoffs. And there have been some really good articles lately. I don't know if, Adam, if you've seen many of these, but the real impact of a tariff is not an immediate restarting of inflation. Yes, it can elevate the price level a bit at first. And then when they go away, it'll go back down. But inflation, by definition, is a series of rounds of increasing pricing, and tariffs don't do that. So they've looked over a bunch of the times we've had tariffs in the past, and what tends to happen is there will be some kind of an impact between about 0.8 and 1.6% on the price level. And then, like I said, when they're pulled, it goes back away. And I think there's way too much panic about the rekindling of the inflationary spiral right now. I got into all of this because I heard a very interesting thing just this week. Walmart has told all of their Chinese suppliers to eat the tariff. Now, I don't know how many of you do business with Walmart, but when Walmart gives you an order, you pretty much look for a way to obey it. My ex-business partner is a manufacturer of hand tools, and I was on his board when he recited how they got involved with Walmart. This, the difference between a normal customer and Walmart stands out real well on this one. So he went down to Bentonville, and he had an appointment prearranged. They're either 10 minutes or 15 minutes or something like that for your presentation. You get shown to the office, sit down, and the person will slide a piece of paper over to you. You read it and sign it, or he won't even say hello. And the sign is, I understand that my price and my delivery and all that are critical, and if I blow it, I'm out. So he did that, gave the presentation, left, didn't hear a word for a long, long time. All of a sudden, they get an order in the mail. It's for something like 150,000 units, which for a little company like that was a really solid order. And they made them and they delivered them, and nothing happened again. And they waited and waited and waited. And apparently during that time, Walmart does a sort of a sales check and all that to see if they're moving. And then they get another order, and it's millions of dollars, millions and millions. And if you blow it, you'll never get another one. The problem with dealing with Walmart is that they try to own you, and they generally have enough control that it's almost like owning you. Now, for that, what do you get? Volume. Lots yep. and lots and it's, lots of volume.
It's the same problem any business with a customer that is outsized one customer that's an outsized percentage of their business yep. faces. It's great because you get tons of revenue and volume, but it puts your business in a very risky situation where if that goes away, you might fold.
Yeah, well, back in the old days when we were still living there, in Racine where manufacturing was a big deal. I had a lot of friends who were manufacturers, and one of them had made the classic mistake. He was a die caster, and 70% of their business was Chrysler. And they got a phone call one morning from Chrysler. Stop making everything. Stop shipping anything. Mm-hmm. We'll call you. Don't call us. And he went belly up just like that.
That is the risk.
The 10-20-70 rule doesn't work that way. It works the other way. 10% for one customer, fine. Even 20 for one, if it's manageable. The 70's got to be really diversified. You know, it's just like in our business. We have, 160?
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, clients. Some are huge. Some are tiny. And there's everything in between. But the business itself functions on that diversified group of assets, and everybody is treated the same. Some have more impact, but it doesn't really matter to us if you're huge or in between or small. If you're the type of people that we want to do business with and we're the type of people that you want to do business with, fine, come on board. And it would be very dangerous if you ran any company, but especially something like ours, where you had a gigantic client or customer, because it's just like with my friend in Chrysler, the business just folded. There was no way to carry it on anymore because he had violated that rule. And he knew it and paid the price.
The thing is, when those opportunities come up, they're very hard to turn down. Yep. Because you start seeing the dollar signs associated with them, and you accept the risk and you take it. I mean, it's very, yeah. What's the argument against taking a huge client?
You want to double your business?
Right.
Here's your opportunity. Understand what it means.
Yep.
The other thing you better know is if you do take on something like that, don't stop selling. That's when you really got to get out and do some selling, because you want things to dilute the impact of that yeah. huge account in your business.
Or you have to have a plan in place for if it goes away.
Exactly. Yeah, very much so. One of the mistakes he made also was they had built a second facility for machining, and it stocked it with some very expensive equipment. And all of a sudden, there was nothing to do in that factory.
Yeah, so, that'll get you every time.
Yeah, unless you're debt-free. If you're debt-free, fine, go about your business. But most of us aren't. Speaking of debt-free, like the government isn't. The Congress is in budget negotiations right now. And you, if you've been listening to me for any period of time at all, I've been doing this for 23 years, almost 24 years now, you've heard me rail about a lot of things over all that time. One of them is the stupid bird rule for budgeting in the Senate. It has to be revenue neutral or all that stuff over 10 years, which means you have to lie on both ends of it. That's going on right now. But it's unusually powerful right now, I guess, and it's really getting in the way. So when Joey was in last week, I illustrated it by asking some simple questions like, if you pay a higher tax rate tomorrow than you do today, did you get a tax cut? Did you get a tax hike? Or was it tax neutral? If you pay a lower rate tomorrow than you did today, did you get a tax cut, a tax hike, or tax neutral? And if you pay exactly the same tomorrow as you did today, did you get a tax cut, a tax hike, or was it tax neutral? And I asked that question because in the Senate, heretofore, the Senate rules, because of the Byrd rule especially, Senate rules say that if we extend the current tax rates, that which you all pay at whatever bracket you're in, if we extend those, it's an act of Congress that can do it, so to speak, because without an act of Congress, they go back up to the old rates, and you get a massive tax increase. So they have to do nothing to give you a tax increase. That is ridiculous. So there's a group of senators now that are trying to change that rule to say the following. If we extend the rates or make them permanent, there is no tax increase. There is no tax savings. It's the way it is, and it can't be scored by the Congressional Budget Office as being a cut or a tax. It has to be scored at zero. Because CBO are not inventive people. They were created by Congress to do the will of Congress the way Congress wants it done. So what Congress tells them they have to do, they have to do. So even if it's a behavioral thing where you know if you cut taxes, you're going to get more business, they are not allowed to predict the cost of something based on any behavior. The whole system is just completely nuts. But if we can get rid of that provision whereby extending today's rates is considered a gigantic tax cut or tax expenditure if you sit in Congress and you think all the money should be yours, if we can call that revenue neutral, you're going to have a totally different budget negotiation right now, because they're looking at 7.1 to 1.1 trillion as being the cost of this thing. That knocks out about 4.6 billion right there, or 4.6 trillion over time, I guess. And I can't imagine why it can't be done, except to say that half of the Congress doesn't want it done. So I'll report on it to everybody. We can talk about the foolishness in it all day long. But if that single little thing gets changed, everybody in this country is going to be more prosperous starting next year. And I personally cannot wait. So we'll see. I could go on forever. And luckily for you, there's a break coming up, so I won't. How about that? All right, when we come back, we got all kinds of goodies. We've got to remind everybody, lines are open, 904-222-8255. Trivia question is still out there. We can discuss some more of that. If you want to change the subject to anything you want to talk about, you know how to do it. Otherwise, we'll pick on some other little things that are going on. I don't know if Adam's got any bugs that are bugging him right now or not, but we'll find out when we come back. So we'll pay the last portion of the bills for this week and take a little time here, but we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I remind everybody once again, the lines are open, 904-222-8255. And trivia question is out there. There have been 24 market corrections since November of 74. How many of those years in the intervening there were there actually two corrections in the same calendar year? It's a number greater than zero and less than 24, just to help you out a little bit. So don't be afraid to guess. All right, Adam just showed me something in the break that was very interesting. I'm going to let him tell you about it.
Yeah, it's a website I just found out about called Trueflation, trueflation.com. And it is, if you are a longtime listener to the show, we've talked many times about the Chapwood Index and what the goal of that was. It appears that they've gone offline. They haven't updated since 2023, but they used to take the top, I think, 20 metro areas in the U.S., and they would take a basket of goods that people would buy, and they would actually check the prices on those same goods year over year, month over month, and compare them, and to get a more accurate reading on inflation in those cities than what the government tells you, which is more of a broad-based sort of sometimes biased downward type of inflation number.
Sometimes,
yeah.
If it comes out too high, they just change it.
So the Chapwood Index appears that they may have stopped doing it. So, but I found this thing, which started in 2020, and it is apparently a much more sophisticated version of the Chapwood Index. It shows real-time inflation for a bunch of different countries, including the U.S., and what they use is actually data feeds from companies that provide daily real-time pricing for different goods. And it's I think, several million goods or items that are sold. The pricing is tracked, and it's daily. So it's pretty cool. Right now, it has the U.S. inflation index at 1.37, and that has really fallen off a cliff since January, when it was peaked out around 3%. And if you go back to July of 2022, you're seeing a peak at just under 12%. So it looks to be fairly accurate based on our experience and what we have seen over the last 4 years, 5 years almost at this point. And it's interesting that it has fallen so much recently with all the tariff talk and mm-hmm. inflation being inflationary. We're certainly not seeing it according to this measure. So I thought it was really interesting. Trueflation.com.
Yeah, cool. I've got one for you too. I stumbled across this guy this morning and haven't had a chance to get too far into it, but he's very prolific. His name is Ben Carlson, and that meant absolutely nothing to me. And I did not know about his website, but I found it, and I love it because it's called awealthofcommonsense.com.
Okay.
He is a very prolific writer, advisor, and so on. And I knew after reading the summary page on the very first thing that I was going to like him, because here's one of his quotes. It's under a section called About a Wealth of Common Sense. Albert Einstein once said, if you can't explain it to a six-year-old, you don't understand it yourself. Now, you know how close that is to what I've always said about if you can't explain it to a 12-year-old in 5 minutes, it won't be in the portfolio. So I'm going to be looking in on this guy frequently, Ben Carlson. So I got two new sites now to visit on a weekly basis. I've been very disappointed that Chapwood has not been producing the index for some time now, because every 6 months, like clockwork, I used to report on it. It and the difference between what you're hearing and what it is, and of course what comes out of your wallet every time you go anywhere. So maybe the new one will be something that we can get a better handle on. But I do love the conclusion that Adam drew from it, because if that's really reflective of what's going on out there, what it's going to mean is that the Fed is going to start dropping rates, which personally I don't get any benefit from. In fact, I'm not a borrower, I'm a lender, so it's going to hurt me a bit, and yet I will root for it because there are so many people that would benefit, and when the majority of the people benefit, the economy does better. You know, look what's happening to bring companies back and people back, and if we can get the inflation down, this place is not going to resemble itself in about another 18 months or 2 years. I don't know, everybody's in a real hurry to see prices actually go down, because after all, Trump's had 6 weeks, right? eggs ought to be $1.50 by now.
The one thing he has done, according to Trueflation, is stopped the inflation on the Big Mac, because they have a Big Mac index and it's been flat since Election Day.
Huh.
So, yeah, but it is up since 2010. The average price of a Big Mac was just under $3.50, and today $5.69. But it's been there since last year, so that's good news. Perhaps Big Macs will be getting cheaper in the future.
Yeah, when they get the cowboy ribeye down a few bucks a pound, then we'll talk. we've been acting like, I guess, smart people, and just avoiding things that we say, no, it's too pricey, I'm not going to do it. I detest having to change my ways, and technically I don't have to. It's just that neither Sarah nor I can look at this stuff and say, I'll pay that. We just say, no, I'm not going to do that. It's crazy. All right, there are a couple little goodies before we run out of time here. An interesting thing is happening in the Labor Department. You've probably heard me talk about my reluctance for, her name is DeReamer, I think, and I don't know to this day she's in, because she is a proponent of the PRO Act. Those are the people that want to get together and take the 1099 people, the subcontractors, and turn them into employees. And what she's favoring now, she says, is an improvement in fringe benefits for these people. Well, if you're working for yourself, who provides your fringe benefits? Let me think about that for a bit. But she says, and I will believe her until I'm proven wrong, that she wants to have maybe consortiums or whatever you want to call it, where independently employed people can go and get group health insurance, things like that. If that's the case, I will apologize to her face. You know, when when Sarah and I got married in 1972, she became a teacher, and I was working for a big company. 2 years later, I wasn't working for a big company. I was on my own, and she had the fringe benefits, which allowed me to do that. But we've been saying since before 1974 that independent people like that ought to be able to form groups and get group rate plans for everything from health insurance to life insurance and so on. And if she's actually going to do this, it would be a great thing. Well, but if she's going to try to make you into an employee, no.
Those actually exist today. I have several of them. I get I get my long-term disability through the NAPFA organization. Mm-hmm. And that's a group plan because we are financial planners. Okay. There are others that exist. That's the one I use. But there are health plans available through the same thing. And so, yeah, that is a thing that exists. I don't know how widespread it is, but it does exist.
Yeah, when I had disability, which they terminated age 65, so that's been all 10 years now I've been out of it, I had to get it through principal, and it was kind of a group, but not really, and it was kind of expensive. And
well, it's always kind of expensive. Yeah. It's something you're actually somewhat likely to use, not extremely likely, but more so than, a life insurance policy.
It's one thing to be a populist, and it's another thing to make things a good deal, I guess. But I'm all for it. I love the independent working arrangements, 1099s, gigs. Young people love it because they get to set their hours, things like that. So we'll see. I'm open. If I'm wrong about her, you'll be the first to know.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This one scares me. Yesterday in D.C., they had the crypto, Lollapalooza, I guess, with all the big heads of crypto. And we have a crypto czar in the White House now and all that. And they're talking about now digitizing the American dollar. And Mr. Wonderful, Kevin O'Leary, was on Fox as I was prepping this morning. And he is all in favor of digitizing the dollar, saying that it will strengthen our currency for the entire world, so on and so forth. And every time I hear the term digitizing the dollar, my back shivers all the way down. I'm scared of it. With this administration, I don't think there's much to worry about. But when a bunch of takeover liberals get back in charge, and they will, then they have the ability, if this thing is all digitized, to track every single thing you do, and at that point, this place ceases to exist. So I'll be on top of that, too. And now, there's a little fear-mongering from the Internet. On March 10th, 2025, the Federal Reserve is rolling out...
We have a phone call.
Oh, we do? Okay. Oh, Bosco, quit. Oh, sorry. Hey, Adam caught me off guard.
This bracket. Let me throw this bracket in so everybody can use it.
Yeah.
Free.
It's almost close enough. I would give it to you, but not quite.
No, got to get it on the head. Yeah. But you were really close. It was actually
in fact,
four.
Yeah, we'll give it out now because it's getting so late.
Y'all have a great day. Another great program.
Thanks, Bosco.
I got a few seconds. Yeah. They were 1980, 1990, 2015, and 2018. He's gone, but that's what happened, folks. Anyway, man, that kind of scared me. I don't look at the phone with an hour left, so phew. Anyway, when this thing on March 10th goes over, I'll be watching to see. They say the world's going to fall apart. It's not. Don't worry about that part. I'll take care of the worrying for you. All right, we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. We'll be here same time. This is the Van Weef.